This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The revolution will be podcasted. Thank you, Eli Braden, for that theme song that just, it makes me wet. I get wet.
You took the words right out of my vagina. Thank
Man, again. By the way, that's my favorite part. That is my favorite part. Taking words out of my vagina. Yeah. It's so much. And then you have to guess the word.
Danny, I'm excited about our guest today.
This one I'm really excited about.
More than most, right?
To be honest with you, they've all been yawns. But this one is a major, this is a good get. I have to thank you for this, Jenny.
Yeah, you're welcome. This this gentleman,
yeah,
you know him from your work, Danny.
Yeah, yeah. I think most people know him, probably some on the street, as Senior Kaplan. I think that's basically the way, I mean, I'm sure that's it. But in addition to that, Mad TV, and by the way, we're not going to promote new stuff, but Mad TV, Best in Show.
Drop Dead Gorgeous, Drop one of Dead. My favorites.
A brilliant internet present.
Yes.
That was really well done. Ladies, take it away, Jenny. You do it. This is why I do the intros.
Ladies, Will Sasso, everyone. Give it up.
Hello.
There we go.
Hey, how's it going?
Thank you for being on.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
It's just such a pleasure, man. Like, you're like, we're gonna blow a ton of smoke over this next 45 minutes, but it's just, we could all use a ton of smoke right now. How's the strike treating you?
I mean, whatever. It's like the pandemic, but you can go to the grocery store. Hey, come on, everybody. jumping out of the gate here, Danny and Jenny. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I think my answer for everyone is, I don't know. I have no prognostication. I don't know what the fuck's going to happen. I'm bummed about it. I'm also happy about it because we'll come out the other end stronger. I don't know. How about that?
I love that answer, by the way. That was my dad's answer to everything. He's like, if you don't want to talk about things, just say you don't know.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, you can't
not have an opinion.
He's like, I don't know. What do you think about the Holocaust? I don't know.
I actually find, like the pandemic, maybe even more than the pandemic, I'm washing my hands more after those.
Seen more sunburn riders in my life.
You know? We don't belong outdoors. I was saying this last week, but it was like, because the actors have given it like a new boost, like having been on the lines for a while. But it was like, my favorite was somebody had just tweeted, I think I said this last week, but they tweeted, I went from a picket line 7 to a picket line 4. The actors going.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Which I thought was like, it perfectly summed it up. So
that's great.
And you guys are just generally, I mean, there are certain writers who are very extroverted. I consider myself that, but the writers are but so with the actors there's a lot more chanting and there's a lot more, it's enthusiastic, you guys.
That's a nice way to put we're performing out there, I guess.
You are needy people.
Yes, but we're extremely needy, and it's got to come out. Yeah. And you're getting the live show, James Corden in the Intersection style.
Right. It's like they just set up a podium and a microphone and everyone's like, is it like karaoke? Do we sign up to fucking, we all want to say our piece. And
What's horrifying for it was always interesting to me from like the, when it was just the writers, it was like the ease with which I picked out the comedy writers from the drama writers. It's like, oh God, we're such a type. But I just got I've been dying to I don't know if I ever got to tell you this when you're on Modern Family, and you were brilliant on that show. By
the cheers.
Way.
Thanks for having me. All I had to do was say your words. Thank you.
Yeah, no, you were
it was a gas.
Yeah, you were just there are certain people like that was a very specific cast and vibe and feeling. And there were those performers, especially those actors we brought in, who just felt like they'd been with the show from the beginning. And you were like, we commented on Senior Kaplan, who's supposed to be a one-off when we first did it. Like we never knew that was coming back. But we kept coming back to that character and you were great. But I have we're all going to blow smoke. This is a long story. I was in rehab in the 90s. It was miserable. You couldn't watch TV. I was at the world's lowest point and hadn't laughed in a while. And at the night, I got the TV was on one night at one, Friday night, I think it was. And Mad TV was on, came on. And again, I'm at my absolute lowest. And Will, you did this sketch called You Are the Love of My Life.
Right.
Yeah. Which you sang, which was this song that the only lyric was, You are the love of my life. Who did you sing it with?
It was Alex Borstein.
Alex Borstein.
And, and they were married. And then it was just that over and over again. And when people ask me, what's the greatest laugh you've ever had?
Oh, no.
I'm just saying this to you. It was the power of something so silly in comedy. It made me feel, I laughed as hard as I've ever laughed at that. And it just hit at the right time. So thank you.
Cheers. That's so kind of you to say. That was a lot of fun. One of those ideas that was like, hey, this is, you're coming up with it. This is funny. Oh, what if we just did this for 8.5 minutes? And then it's we're a sketch show in the 90s. Sketches can go as long as you like. The longer, the better.
It felt almost like a room bit. Like how long had you been joking? Did you and she write it or did you write it with some?
With Gary Campbell, who was a writer producer on the show, who was from Kids in the Hall and has done so many incredible things, and Alex and I would just grab a guitar and start jamming out and thinking what we just want to do something musical, and then I don't know how it devolved into what it became, but yeah, it was like, oh, what if it's like a an award season, super fucking hokey, these two, and then we dragged that concept out over and over and over.
This is the country I love.
Yeah, we did a July the 4th thing. This is the land that I love.
The land that I love.
You are the I don't know. I actually don't know, but there was five of them.
It's the silliness of that. And also my favorite kind of comedy sometimes is the comedy that is funny. It keeps going and it stops being funny. But you stick with it and you wear somebody down and then it's once again funnier than ever. And it's
cheers.
A perfect version of that.
I'm with you. I love that style of comedy. Yeah. I think it comes from, I don't know, you guys tell me. For me, it was when you're a kid and you're being the class clown or whatever, and you're I don't know what the meter is. I'm just going to hammer you. I'm gonna shit hammer you with a joke for 4 months. And it's and then it stops being fun, and everyone's like, stop doing that. And then 3 months in, they start laughing,
Right.
It is so up my, I did used to do this thing with my middle sister, who I've tortured and is, I will forever be apologizing. We take this long, I grew up in Jersey. We take this 4-hour ride to see the grandparents in Pennsylvania. And I sat there and I flipped her. I basically sat there and I gave her the finger almost the entire car ride. And my parents, they'd say, stop it. And I go, I kept going until even she laughed because I couldn't believe I was holding it up. It was 4 hours of flipping her up. And it was just to me, that's what You Are the Love of My Life was.
You committed to the bit.
4 hours of flipping.
Four hours of flipping up the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I used to always take it as like when I was a kid, because my parents never courtesy laughed at me. Like if I said something funny, they would laugh.
Yeah.
But I would just run it into the ground. I would leave the room and come back and say the same exact shit. Like, I'm like, oh, they laughed. I bet they'll laugh again.
Yeah.
And if I kept doing it long enough, they would come back around and start laughing again.
I get it. No, that's
because
it.
I've worn it out so much. It's now ridiculous. Okay. That's now awesome. It works again, you know?
Yeah, totally. So Will, like we always get a little version of this. So I first became aware of you at Mad TV. Obviously, I think a lot of us did. What's your origin story? Was that like the first, obviously there's probably a big break for you, right?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
And what came prior to that? And like, did you always want to be in comedy? It sounds like you were a class clown and
that sort of thing. Yeah. Pretty, you know, a pretty predictable kind of, entree to it as far as being like a kind of a ham kid. And
where'd you grow up? Then,
just outside of Vancouver, Canada, the burbs. And then I was fortunate enough to start working there in my like teens. I got an agent and stuff.
Wow.
Like, whatever. I ran around and like crashed some auditions and this and that. And then I there was stuff shooting in Vancouver. There was American movies and Canadian TV shows.
Yeah.
And so I when I was 16, I ended up on this Canadian show for a couple episodes. And then I did a series for out there for like 5 years. It was like a Canadian dramatic. It's like a, you know, it was kind of like a Degrassi thing in Vancouver on the West Coast. And, you know, it aired all over the country, which still doesn't count because it's Canada, but
it counts a little.
All right. And then, I started auditioning. You do some American movies down there and then you start trying again and finally get down there. What's that?
When did you move down to LA?
96.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And tell what was the process of getting onto Mad, and what year was that, by the way? Was that first season?
No, 97 was my first year. It was their third season.
Uh-huh.
And they had kind of like a few of the cast members had left, and I came in, and Alex Borstein came in, Ari Spears, Pat Kilbane, we all came in that year.
Wow.
And then it was the third season. And so I was fortunate enough to build a resume as a younger fella in Canada, to where, you know, I came down to LA, and before I had moved down, I ended up, you know, I met a studio executive with the old Columbia TriStar with whom I had done a pilot for Fox in 96. He introduced me to my manager, who's still my manager now.
Wow.
Danielle Dell. And I'd be well out of this business without her. And from there, you know, I went into a pilot season and was like, at the end of that, I just remember, you know, being very specific, but Mad TV was recasting that summer. And I had actually sent them a tape when the show started.
Sure.
And from, you know, from back home and then, you know, it was like, when I got there, I was like, gee, I wonder if this tape is still, you know, like we would have long taped over it with like a Doctor Who marathon or I don't know.
I've talked to some people from Mad TV. Did you ever go for SNL? I know I've talked to a lot of, tell me if you did, I'm fascinated with that process.
Same.
Kenny and I talk about it all the time. What's your SNL?
No. Never. No, I ended up, you know, I mean, I auditioned for Mad TV and that was that. And
that's amazing.
So you're I'm not trying to ruffle feathers and jump ship.
Yeah. No, I love those stories too, by the way. They are insane.
Yeah. And terrifying a little bit.
Years after I left Mad TV, we inquired, you know, because I was like, I don't know, I like doing sketch. Maybe I should do some more sketch and stuff in the mid 2000s. And they were like, no, thanks. And then that was it.
Oh, I was curious if you had tried even before Mad TV or, you know, things like that.
Growing up in outside of Vancouver, who were your influences? Like, who were the people that you were like, oh my God, this is what I want to do? Who, like, kind of made it you?
It was a pretty, like, predictable list of the entire, all the, you know, the complete casts of SCTV, Saturday Night Live, Monty Python. It was that kind of late 70s, early 80s. And then
Yeah, same.
But, you know, I wasn't Saturday Live started, you know, before I was conscious of it or whatever, the year I was born or whatever. And then, but then you're watching it in reruns, you're seeing clips, and then you're watching it in the mid-80s. And that was just, you know, it was coming to school on Monday after that. And then, and I have to say, you know, a little bit later, like, where I'm from in Canada, it's like grades 8 to 12, you go from 8 to 12. And those years were the 5 years that Kids in the Hall was on. And in Canada, it was on the CBC. So you want to talk about, you know, coming to school the next day.
Yeah.
It's still my favorite show.
Oh, likewise. I mean, I'm a little older than you, but I think I just gotten out of college because I think they went on like in '80s. I graduated '86. 80, so right around there. Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, those guys are all my age. And it was like the first time I'd seen like a cast that was, these are my contemporaries.
Yeah.
Where I'm not like looking up, because SCTV was everything to me growing up. I always felt like I was like, it was my little secret. Like I liked Saturday Night Live, but SCTV, like, cause it wasn't before, like it was like got on NBC. They would run it on affiliates down here. And I was that snobby kid who like bands before, like they got popular. That's how I felt about SCTV. So I was like obsessed with Canadian comedy as a result of that. I just thought it was like, and then Kids in the Hall just cemented it for me. God, yeah.
I don't think there's a more, I mean, to me, it's the most pure sketch show in their delivery and what they do as a cast. It's like, here's a group of guys that are firing on all cylinders and then they get a TV show. There's no growing pains.
Yeah.
And the comedy is like, I mean, I just think they just have such a high batting average because they know exactly what they are. And then it happens to just hit me right.
It's like the Beatles playing like all those shows in Germany. So yes. That when they had to break, like they'd already done like 24 hours of music like every day.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
Lorne Michaels wasn't there to, you know, ruin.
SCTV. Yeah, that's right. He wasn't there.
Scarier than one shitless the whole time.
Yeah.
Danny, I remember
the talented one.
I was going to say, Danny, I remember you sending me that video that was your favorite of the Christopher Cross song.
Rick Moranis.
I'd like the wind.
on the Gary Todd show.
On the Jerry Todd show, it was Jerry Todd. First of all, Jerry Todd was like that. He had that one. He did all those parts, but when he did Turning Japanese, remember he would sing those songs like
Turning Japanese.
But yeah, that it's Christopher Cross singing for our audience. It's Christopher Cross singing "Ride Like the Wind"
and with Michael McDonald.
And he's Michael McDonald, but he's just getting ready for work and driving. Gets in time just for Christopher Cross to say, "And I got a long way to go." And he goes, "Such a long way to go." So fucking funny.
And then the chorus continues, and he goes out and signs paperwork.
And then just run back into the
kitchen. He was like, such a
like filing his taxes and shit. Like. Yeah.
So another clip recently that I had totally forgotten where it was Rick Moranis as Mel Torme, I think, singing the national anthem as they signed off. And it was like, we'll post it. I'll find it and we'll post it with this episode. But it was basically, oh say, can you see by the top? Oh, and he goes off on to all of it's just fantastic. So
yeah.
What was your first like big movie? Because I'm thinking of Drop Dead Gorgeous. Maybe that was that the biggest like the.
I had a small part in Happy Gilmore we shot that. I guess I came out in '96. Which was shot in Vancouver. We shot it in '95, and then I was one of the I'm just moving Happy's grandmother's stuff out of her house because it's being, you know, it's the word I'm having a mind for, but they're repossessing the house. And so there's just movers, we're playing golf on our lunch break out in the front yard, and Happy Gilmore comes out and whacks it, you know, 400 yards. So there was that. And then actually, the next year, the same director, I went down to LA and did Beverly Hills Ninja, Chris Farley movie.
I actually met I briefly met and a friend of mine got very close with Chris Farley on like that script, and you know, so we got to.
Oh wow!
So, yeah, I got to, but we, you know, I didn't get it, and my friend didn't get it, but Chris could not have been a lovelier guy. Did you know him at all? Did you know him?
Just not coming up to it. No, I just the Dennis Dugan directed Happy Gilmore, and then was directing Beverly Hills Ninja the next year, and he goes, "I think you could do this part." So I put myself on tape, and then at the end of that, I got it. And Chris Farley was the sweetest man. That always had the crew in stitches. Was an absolute sweetheart to everybody. And the story I always tell is we're sitting there one day and just outside at this strip mall in LA shooting the scene, and these dudes walk by, these like kids, and they're like behind this fence and their security and stuff, and they see Chris and they freak out and they run away, and they come back later, like 15, 20 minutes later, and they had like dog-eared, like Tommy Boy poster that was clearly on their wall. These are probably, you know, comedy guys or something, like, you know, they were just 20 years old.
Yeah.
Out in LA, they had, you know, like the VHS tapes of Black Sheep and Best of Chris Farley on SNL and all this stuff. And Chris is like, let him in, you know, and they come in and he's signed. And I just remember him signing, like just writing the longest thing on their poster. Oh. And the whole time, and they're, you know, they're talking, and he's, you know, he's sharing little stories. And I just remember him thanking them over and over again, like, oh, thanks guys. Thanks. Like, it was so sweet. And I don't know, like that just was like, oh, this guy. And Sandler too, the year before was like, I remember, we were coming out one day, you know, people loading into the van for lunch, and there are these neighborhood kids on BMX bikes, and there's all these cameras in the front yard, and Sandler goes into the van and he shouts at them, don't steal anything, right? And they laugh. And then he comes back later after lunch and hung out with them for like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. We were ready to go inside, and it's like, you know, where's Adam? He's outside talking to those kids. People are like, all right. And just
that.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, these are like,
that's
real people.
I know. And it's nice. And by the way, everybody says that.
About Sandler. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Farley. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And they're great. And I mean, you know, and they, even though they're, you know, they get that big, they can still be down to earth. And, you know,
like when I told you that my very first, like, I have a monthly show at the Hollywood Improv now that I started in September with a buddy of mine. And the very first show we did, Booker comes in and she goes, hey, Adam Sandler's here. He wants to know if it'd be okay if he.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, yeah, I think it would be okay if fucking Adam Sandler shows up on my show, the very first one I'm putting on. But he came up to me. He was like, are you sure it's okay? I didn't want to, you know, like.
Come on.
Such a fucking nice guy. I'm like, yeah, I'll bump everyone on this lineup for you.
Right. Yeah.
Do you guys follow on Instagram, New York Nico? You know that one?
No, but I will.
New York Nico is just like this really cool weirdo who he's just walking around New York and everyone knows him. And it's a little bit like how to. Yeah. So it's just him catching all these cool moments, and he just rolls up on this park. This is quite recently. I don't know, a couple of days ago I saw, and there's Sandler playing pickup basketball. If you've seen it, you know, it kind of got memed around on Instagram. Yeah. And you're just like, you know, I don't know, like, here's this guy, you know, he's Adam Sandler, he's huge and he's worth whatever. And, but it's like, you can't deny someone who's like, I'm playing basketball with you guys.
Right.
Like, you know, there's nothing. I mean, it's breaking bread. No. You're just like, you're on the court and you're playing basketball now. And that's what matters. And everyone's just chilling. I mean, also, you know, they're in New York where, you know, people are just going to be like, yeah, whatever. Hey, how are you?
It's like, it shouldn't be as special as it is. But I think we all know people who don't behave that way and aren't, you know, imperious. And they, you know, they let, you know, they just forget who they are. Something that Jenny and I have never forgotten. Speaking of social media. So a couple things about you that, like, my son, when he was, you know, he's now, you know, 22, but when he was, little and Vine was a thing, the oranges or the lemons, that lemon bit you would do on Vine, was just, it killed us every time. It was so fucking stupid and weird and well cut. Do you remember that, Jenny?
No, I never looked at Vine. I don't know. It's
on YouTube, a collection of Will Sasso lemons where he would be like something quick, what? And then like a lemon would pop out of his mouth, followed by a ton of water. And what was the inspiration? Was that something you didn't know? What was the inspiration for that?
I was just, I don't know. I liked Vine. I was like, this is cool. A video, video medium for an app.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it was just, kind of, this limited thing. Here's 7 seconds. It was like Twitter back and Jenny. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's just like, and I'm speaking to you, where the comedy writers are going, here I am.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like, Vine was a neat thing just visually. And so I was literally sitting around and going like, oh, what if something pops out of my fat head? Because it's just like, what could be funny in 2 seconds? I don't know. And then I went to the fridge and was like, ah, here's an idea. And
yeah, then, I used to love that.
Do a dozen of those the way we would do the You Are the Love of My Life on Mad TV. Really grind it down.
Yeah, no, they always work. And see, the one thing you do right now, which is I'm literally going to use your bit because it is so me, but you'll show like a video that is just completely, utterly random of something with the block letters OMFG. So me, it's so me, right? Like right. It has nothing to do with that. It just, that fucking kills me, man.
I would look, speaking of the strike, if I could, and I'm sure a lot of people feel this way, maybe you guys do too. If I could do nothing but like lay in my underwear and make memes for the rest of my life and get paid to do it, that would be cool. However, that's not how show business works. Yeah. So I really have to limit my time to about 8 hours a day to just pick that one video. They're like, this will make Danny laugh.
You do. I'm like tuned into your fucking radio station, man. It's like it's like you are so fucking silly, and it's like in the best way. It just fucking kills me.
Wait, although you photoshopping yourself into every picture.
I don't do those photoshops. The ones you're talking about. Just people send me those.
Oh shit! Oh, really? I thought you did.
No, I know how I would. I like Photoshop. I do some Photoshop, but those, I know what you're talking about. If I take if there's ever a close up of my head, I make like a fat neck face or whatever. Kids are like, yeah, let's put him. Here he is. He's Grimace now. And, whatever. And they just, I love it. This is funny. It's like, I remember I was shooting this movie a couple years ago. And don't worry, it already came out. I'm not with any sack. Yeah. But and I just remember I was by this like seaplane, right? Like we're just shooting the scene and there's a seaplane and I'm on this dock. And, I had like this, scarf and London fog jacket. Uh-huh. And I just took this picture where I'm like, dumb, just whatever. Instagram, you're bored. You're sitting there in your chair, ignoring each other, all the actors. And I just remember popping that off, and then everyone just starts just sending me these memes or these Photoshops. And I just remember going like, I'm a bad actor. Look, I'm very diligent. I want to know my lines. I hit my marks. I do, I mean, it's like, I love what I do and I'm fortunate to do it. And I'm sharing this with you partly out of embarrassment, but just sitting there, like organizing them into, well, I got to put 10 of these in a post. Uh-huh. And then, this one's a little big, so I got to put the white on the top and the bottom. Okay, I got to throw that into that app. And pretty soon you're spending like an hour and a half doing this. And you're like, what scene's up next? It's like the one where you die. What do you mean? And you're like, yeah. And you're photoshopping, look at these. Hey, look at this. You show the director. Is that what you've been doing? Where are you?
I completely relate. Like during the pandemic, I would make like a little tiny video, but I remember like I became aware of it more. I was using my son as a foil and a prop in it, like to help me with certain stuff. And it's like, we're going to take it again. And I was watching him getting aggravated at his dad doing silly fucking shit. Now, you know, it was like, yeah, it takes forever. And I'm not good at that stuff. You're better at that. Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
Oh yeah. You'd be good with them though, because there's like,
no, that sounds like a nightmare, Danny. Stop making everyone have kids.
No, I don't want everybody to have kids. I just like, my son was very excited that I was going to talk to you because,
please say hi to me.
Okay. So I have to ask, because two of my favorite movies of all time you are in, which is Drop Dead Gorgeous and Best in Show.
Oh, cheers.
And I've only seen the second one.
I'm telling you. Okay. First off, when I first saw Drop Dead Gorgeous, I thought it was a Christopher Guest movie.
Sure. Yeah.
Did a lot of people think that?
Yeah, I think so, because of the sort of the documentary feel. Yeah. It did sort of feel that way, but yeah, it was, man, that thing was insane. Just
Hanky, when you played Hanky in Drop Dead Gorgeous. Yeah. And then I can't tell you how many times, like growing up in Texas, how many times, this is from Best in Show, that people would go like, hey, you get tired, pull over. You get hungry, eat something. I mean, like that resonated with me so hard. Like to this day, I will still say that shit. Like, my brother-in-law and I say it to each other all the time. Where you get tired, pull over, you get hungry, eat some. That was one of the funniest things. So was that all ad-lib from that movie?
That was ad-libbed.
Amazing. Where,
you know, you get two or three takes and it's like, I mean, he shoots Mr. Guest, as I like to call him, shoots, you know, I don't know, like 60 hours of different shit and has to whittle it down to, you know, I mean, you know, just like, and I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. That was a dream. I mean, Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap is one of my favorite movies. One of everybody's favorite movies.
Of course.
And then Waiting for Guffman, I thought was like one of the most genius things to come along. It was so unique. And so to get a bit in Best in Show, I was like,
it's sort of the pinnacle for, I mean, I loved all of the movies you talked about. There's something about Best in Show, maybe partly because my dad used to show our Great Dane. And so I used to, my first grade, when I was like young, we had like this, like we had a champion Great Dane, it would go there. And so I was around some of those people. And it was just that world. But even apart from that, I was saying before you got on, I was talking about like the two people, like, and this is a great compliment, I wanted so much more of both you and Larry Miller. Like those are the two, the incidental people. And, also the, what's his name? The Paul Bent, the clerk at the front desk guy at the hotel who's getting yelled at. He just basically says, I'm just as God made me, as the big glasses.
This is Spinal Tap.
Oh,
that's Spinal Tap. Yeah, it's like, listen, you twisted old prune. These men are tired. I'm just as God made me.
That's right. Oh, I'm conflating the two hotel people.
Yeah, can I tell you something? I did Best in Show, and I was like, so out of it's such an out of body experience.
Yeah,
and then I remember we were shooting this scene where we're showing the other fellow who works in this bait and tackle shop. He's like showing us this map with like different lures. It's like, yeah, you move over here, you could da da da. And then he's shooting this overhead shot, like, you know, just literally all the way like down, like snooker on ESPN style. And then, and it's just, and I keep putting my hand in going, well, what, but if you did this, and I'm touching and they don't want me to touch it. And Christopher Guest is like grabbing my hand and pulling it off and keeps doing that. And we're shooting this other angle of it. I just crack up. I just, and then Christopher Guest goes, now, Will, I just want you to know something. And you don't know, nobody knows if he's so dry. Right. You don't know if and he goes, I just want to let you know, if you laugh during the scene, then we can't use that. And I go, and I laugh even louder. And then, a couple years later, he had me come out and I did a bit in A Mighty Wind, which didn't make it into the film, but it was a scene with Larry Miller. And there's a press conference where, and there's balloons, and it's just this subtle joke that the balloons are red, white, and black. And so I'm the balloon delivery guy, and I come to the, I bring the balloons to Larry Miller, and I'm like, oh, here are the balloons, you sign here. And he's like, what are these? These are red, white, and black. What? I'm sorry, what country is that? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, Croatia, sign here, you know? And then he's doing his thing, and he goes on this jag, and he makes me laugh, and I...
Oh, no. Right?
And Christopher Guest, who at this point has this red Bozo haircut for the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got his headphones on. He's sitting there watching the monitor and directing, and it cut. And he puts his headphones down around his neck, and he walks over and just dry as hell goes, I don't know if you remember, but we had a conversation a couple of years ago, and I just couldn't stop laughing. Like, and to this day, it's like, I've spoken to other people who've worked with him. And it's like how, you know, you're afraid to pitch things to him because out of contemporaries of his, I've heard these stories from where they're like, you know, like going, I don't, you know, I pitch this thing, but like, you know, I was talking to Mr. Ed Begley Jr. about it. He goes, I had this thing where I was this doctor, and I would just, my doctor would have his glasses, and he would, and if you're listening, here's what he's doing. He's got his glasses, and he leaves it on one ear, and then the rest of the glasses hung down across his face, and they looked so stupid. But he said, my doctor would do this. So when he would talk to you, and then he'd get to a serious part, he'd take the glasses off and hang them off his face, and they'd just be pulling his one ear down, and then he'd start speaking, you know, seriously. And he goes, I pitched this. I made the mistake of, you know, saying, Chris, I think blah, 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 before we shot the scene. And he just looked at me with dead eyes and goes, what are you talking about? What are you even? No, I don't know. You know, okay. So then they shoot the scene and they get a take. And he goes, and then he says to Christopher Guest, goes, I thought, what about the glasses thing? Aren't you going to do that?
Oh, my God.
So you never know. And it's like, you know, he's one of the funniest people, but also, he's a master of that craft, and you're walking into his world. It's like the most daunting thing. And anything you can here, I'll tell you, but like one time he gave me this nice gift of an ad lib. So stupid. He goes, in Best in Show, he goes, we're about to shoot the scene. He just hands me a cassette tape and he goes, here, do something with this. And I go, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I don't know. Like, you know, you want me to listen to something on the road, it's on this. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh,
yeah. But he gives it to you, you know, and it's just very playful. And then I remember I just said something like, I just went, hey man, hey, I want to make sure I gave you this. This is that, oh, who's this? Oh, it's that guy who does them funny songs. And he goes, all right. And he just totally downplays it and just, he shoves it in Harlan, he just shoves it in his pocket and doesn't, like the moment lasts a second and a half and it's in the film. And it's just
real.
He's in the Matrix. So he knows.
Fucking perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's what would happen. You'd have this idiot going, if you get hungry, eat something. Hey, man, this that guy does them funny songs. It's like Ray Stevens or something, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Well, Guy was actually saying, before you came on, he was like, I love when he's like, who's going fishing? Who's going to catch a big fish? Who's going to he's like, no, Dale, we're not going fishing. Yeah. We're going to a dog, you know, it's a dog show, you know, it's like, here's that, like everything that your character continuing, like just keeps just digging a hole.
You also see like all those characters are so like, there's a good natured quality about like all of them. And it's like, that comes through even, it's like, I don't know. It's just very open hearted, that move. Like
there's not, you're right. There's not a character in those Chris Guest movies who isn't a pleasant person who's driven to some sort of, you know, maniacal, thing by the end to where, and nothing if not annoying and probably really hard to be around, but all of them are like, every single character almost is like a well-meaning person. There's no villains in those movies.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, the best Parker of intentions.
Parker Posey is pushing it a little bit, but I mean,
not much.
No, but no, I love what Parker Posey does in that movie. I'm just saying, she might be not somebody who felt as, but you also feel how wound up she is with the braces and every aspect of that is just like, Yeah, it's so good. And I'm glad to hear you say that about Christopher Guest. I'm glad to hear Ed Bailey say it about him. Because, like, I've met him a couple times, and there's a few people that just, like, I felt really intimidated around him. And some, like, I've worked with Eugene a couple times, and it took a while to, I felt like with Eugene, I was like, because he meant the world to me, like Bobby Bittman, all that stuff. It was everything to me. And so, like, when I was working with him, it was like, I'm just slowly breaking him down. I remember handing him a script and, like, afterwards and fixing a line. And he's like, okay, now that's good. And it was like, oh, better than any award you could get, you know?
Yeah. So. No, I feel the same way. It's, you know, they say don't never meet your idols, rah, 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 which I completely agree. Not because when they're a prick, you're going to be like, oh, that sucked. But because I'll just crawl into myself, like replaying a moment that I had, like laughing in the middle of the thing going, I'm sure I was driving home that day, like just smashing my head on the steering wheel at every stop, like, well, you fucking idiot, you know? But it's just because of the, you know, the rep that they have, and you get around some of those people. It's like, I don't want to bother you. Please just go back to being Eugene Levy and all.
Yeah, no, I wish I had never met Harvey Weinstein. I wish I could just have kept him on a pedestal.
But also for you and Best in Show, like, that had to have been also, like, you were in the scenes with Christopher Guest. It wasn't like you were just in Best in Show. Your scenes were all with.
Absolutely.
The fucking man. Like,
and that, the reason I felt like I don't know, this is just something that, you know, this is just a weird little part of the story, but I always think about it. It's not, I don't know, but I'll say it here. It's like, one of the reasons I was laughing so hard when he kept moving my hand was because I started thinking about the part in Spinal Tap when he's folding the bread. And, and you know, Ian, the manager, is just trying to tell, well, don't fold that part. Just keep that like that. No, but you keep folding. And it's like, oh, he's such a moron. And that shit will never not be funny to me.
Never.
Well, I'm- and to be like doing something silly and physical and look over and there's the actual Christopher Guest for me, which is like,
it's out of body,
And I'm looking at him and then he's legitimately making me fucking laugh and forcibly like moving my hand and banging it down next to the, and I'm just like, and his eyes are just like flinking, like completely dead. And he's doing the funniest shit in the world. And then I start thinking about something that, you know, that of course molds your sense of humor as a youngster. And I'm just like, I gotta get out of here. I can't, what am I doing here? Get me out of here. You know?
I meant to say, like, when you're telling me about that balloon bit where it's, you got red, white, and black, there's a little Stonehenge in that.
There's a little bit of that quality to that. Yeah. Yeah. Where it's like, what do you mean? What do you mean that when the actual piece, what, this is Stonehenge, is this, it's like 20 feet high. No, this is what you showed me. It says 18 inches. And it's like, yeah, Larry Miller, just like, I could do that all day. Just watch Larry Miller get upset about, what country is that? Red, white, and black. There's no, I don't understand why you, this is, you're a balloon shop. Why wouldn't, and I'm like,
I also love, I mean, the one I could do all day is like, can I let you know a little secret? They always jump.
And then when his kid goes up on the roof and he's like, let me handle this. I'm a hostage negotiator. Yeah. I will gouge your eye out. Shit you not, you little
and the way he's coming on. So the Catherine O'Hara is like, is the greatest in that movie. And the way she's coming on to her with, you know, and Eugene Levy just breaks and says to his wife, you have beautiful breasts.
Gee,
that scene is one of the greatest.
And by the way, I always notice that the actress that plays the wife, when he says that, she goes, oh, thank you. And mouth, like, thank you. Like, like you don't hear it, but it's like, you watch her mouth. Thank you. Oh my God. Thank you.
Oh my goodness.
Well, it has been it has been such a pleasure to have you on this show.
Thank you for having me. What a guest.
This is normally where we would talk about stuff that we've been watching and stuff, but I think we should probably, I can't think of anything that I can talk about. Do you, Jenny?
No, I don't think that we should.
I don't think we should. We normally like spend the last minute, like saying, hey, here's what I've been watching or doing or this. So
I don't think that we're supposed to, maybe. The other night I was at the Comedy Store and I just off the top of my head, I was like, thank you all for being here and not being in Italy or the south of France, like everyone on Instagram. Because I was like, no one looks at someone they know on a boat in the south of France and goes, you know what? Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah. Oh, like, I'm sure they're having her.
How
fun.
The hell is she even on this trip, piece of shit?
You know what? They deserve it. I mean, your grandfather worked hard for that money.
Yeah. I hope they get a nice one. Well, probably, it looks like they're enjoying a nice Frito Misto and some rosé. That's nice.
That's on the boat. Them. Yeah. Like, I hope that boat sinks like the fucking Titanic.
Well, you know, it absolute pleasure to have you on, Will.
Thank you guys for having me. What a gas. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Doing It Nation. Stick around while we're going to take a quick picture. And goodbye, Doing It Nation.
Thank you, Doing It Nation. Thank you.